You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my new series, Parrish. My character, Gray Parrish, was a getaway driver.
I'm retired from life. You know that.
He's in a world over his head.
Tell me about this driver job.
And he's asked to start to figure things out.
I did what you told me to.
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC+.
You're listening to part 2 of Unexplained, season 7, episode 18, A Dance with Mr. D. It is late October in 1558. Queen Mary is bedbound in her chambers at St. James's Palace in London. She flitters from bouts of lucidity to states of deep confusion, in the grip of some terrible malady. At times, she calls out in the middle of the night in distress, saying that she has gone blind. She is dying. Mary's life had not been an easy one. As a child, she suffered from constant fevers, depression, and anorexia. Not surprising, considering the cruelty of her father, Henry VIII. When her mother, Catherine of Aragon, was ostracized after Henry jettisoned her for Anne Boleyn, Mary was forbidden from seeing her. And as he did with her mother, Henry often threatened Mary with death, and it was no empty threat at that. He called her illegitimate and denied her the right to call herself a princess. When Mary's mother finally succumbed to illness in 1535, Mary was denied the opportunity to say her goodbyes. As Mary lay dying in October 1558, some believed she'd finally succumbed to the melancholy that had dogged her all her life, though it is more likely she was suffering from an especially virulent strain of influenza that swept across Europe that year. Towards the end, she would come round from bouts of fever to tell of the extraordinary dreams she'd been having and the visions of young, angelic children she'd seen dancing around her bed. In the early hours of November 17th, a deep gasp escaped her lips. Her rib cage expanded for one last time, and then her body was still. The Queen was dead. Earlier that month, the Catholic Mary amended her will to confirm that her sister, the Protestant-leaning Elizabeth, would be her rightful successor. And so, a week after Mary's death, Elizabeth arrived in London to a rapturous reception from her supporters. As city dignitaries stood in line to greet her, Elizabeth offered her hand to be kissed by each of them. One after another took it and planted a soft kiss on the outside of her glove. But when Elizabeth got to Catholic Bishop Edmund Bonner, John Dee's employer, and the man who'd done so much to root out Mary's Protestant enemies, she withdrew her hand, before he had a chance to take it. Elizabeth herself had at one point been held under arrest in the Tower of London, accused of plotting against Queen Mary. It was not a good sign for Bonner or his fellow Catholic bishops and their associates, but while many would soon find themselves exiled or imprisoned indefinitely, John Dee, miraculously, once again, escaped the worst of it. Chief among Elizabeth's immediate concerns was selecting a date for her coronation, and the stakes could not have been higher. Though she had no immediate, realistic challenges to the throne, her position was a precarious one. A deeply unsettled nation was about to welcome its fourth monarch in just over 5 years. That Elizabeth was female only made the job of asserting her authority all the more difficult. Many openly despised the sheer idea of women in positions of power, or, as influential Scottish minister John Knox put it, such a thing was repugnant to nature. On top of that were a series of strange, unsettling prophecies coming from across the Channel in France, made by a man named Michel de Nostradamus, or Nostradamus. He predicted that when Elizabeth took the throne, England would suffer many calamities, weepings and mournings, with civil unrest, in which the lowest in society would rise up against the highest. Like most people of the time, Queen Elizabeth was deeply superstitious and convinced of the power of astrology. She wanted to make sure that the day of her coronation was one that could give her the most luck for a successful reign, one that the very stars in the sky had picked out for her. She needed not just someone of high learning to calculate it for her, but someone with a suggestion of sorcery and arcane knowledge about them, someone who people felt would bring more than mere logic to the equation to help prevent the dire predictions from coming true. There was nobody better for it than John Dee. At the time, Dee still lived in Upton, just outside of the city of London. There, the local children were said to run screaming from him in fright, such was his growing reputation as a magician and conjurer. Only a few weeks after Mary's death, Dee received the request to make a judgment on what would be the best day for Elizabeth to begin her reign. No sooner had he received it, Dee was in his library, frantically searching his shelves for any ancient texts to seek out precedents and auguries of good fortune for the day. Having compiled everything he needed, he drew up a horoscope and concluded that January the 15th, 1559, was the optimum day. As was explained to the Queen-in-waiting later, on that day, Jupiter would be in Aquarius, which promised impending greatness and statesmanship, while Mars was in Scorpio, meaning that Elizabeth would have the necessary passion and commitment to be the country's monarch. Elizabeth was impressed. Queen Elizabeth's coronation was an all-day spectacle, involving the new queen being taken through the thronged streets of London on a golden litter, essentially a large, ornate box carried by servants. The parade was embellished with a series of 5 pageants, designed to be essentially brand-establishing propaganda. The pageant themes variously stressed the new monarch's virtuousness, her Englishness, and her descent from a family that had ended years of civil war in England. The 5th pageant drew parallels between her and Deborah, an Old Testament prophet who supposedly rescued the House of Israel, then ruled successfully for 40 years, And once again, John Dee was at the centre of it all. But not long after Elizabeth was crowned, Dee completely disappeared. For several years, there is no historical record of where he went and what he was doing. The most likely explanation is that he returned to Europe in pursuit of a new quest. When known accounts of Dee resume in February 1563, he was staying at an inn called the Sign of the Golden Angel in Antwerp, Belgium. This time, it seems Dee's quest was to understand the Kabbalah, a mysterious text containing ancient Hebrew knowledge based on mathematics and mysticism going back to the first century. This text was said to contain the secrets of the universe. Among its most important insights was the apparent role of angels, who were said to provide the key to understanding God. Antwerp was a bustling merchant town, as well as home to numerous printing presses and publishing houses, with booksellers galore. Which was why Dee was there. He was hunting a rumoured copy of one of the most secret, valuable manuscripts of the age, of which there were said to be only 3 or 4 copies in existence. Called the Steganographia, it was written by a German abbot called Johannes Trithemius, and was essentially one of the first ever works on cryptography, the science of codes. Dee finally got his hands on a copy and spent a feverish 10 days copying it out. The book outlined an elaborate system for sending messages between two people, like an early version of the Second World War German code-making machine, the Enigma. Except, rather than utilizing a machine, this system required the user to utilize an incantation to summon spirits, who would then communicate the coded transmissions between sender and recipient.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
After finding the Steganographia, John Dee was eager to return to England and determined to make his way into Queen Elizabeth's inner circle. He excitedly wrote to one of Elizabeth's key advisors, William Cecil, describing the mysterious book and its rituals. He believed it would be of great use to the nation as it could help decipher other texts, like the Book of Soiga, thought to contain a divine message from God, which was supposedly written in the first ever language that was spoken by Adam, the first human being. But Cecil, who had no time for or belief in codes that required invoking help from spirits, was unimpressed. Dee finally returned to England in June 1564 and made renewed attempts to secure a post at the royal court. He approached William Cecil again and offered to take on the role as the Queen's court philosopher. Dee described how his years of travel, his great knowledge and his acquaintance with many of the great thinkers of the day meant that he was ideal for such a post. He promised to bring the wealth of Renaissance Europe's finest thinking to England. But again, Cecil was uninterested. Undeterred, Dee made his way to the Queen's court at Greenwich Palace, accompanied by a noblewoman who'd offered to reintroduce him to the Queen. A short time later, the tall and slender Dee, with his long pointy beard, found himself in the royal presence chamber, surrounded by courtiers who chatted politely among themselves as gentle music from minstrels suffused the room. Then eventually he was brought before the sumptuously clothed, bejeweled, and heavily perfumed queen. Bowing deeply, John Dee produced a book from the folds of his gown. It was the Monus Hieroglyphica, a controversial text containing what many considered to be pagan, magical ideas, including astrology, cosmology, and mathematics. It was a huge gamble that could easily have repulsed the Queen, but instead, she was intrigued. She asked Dee to stay and disclose the book's secrets to her. John Dee and Queen Elizabeth sat side by side as Dee patiently took her through the text. Elizabeth was entranced as Dee proceeded to explain all about the strange astrological symbols it contained. After that, Dee gained regular audiences with the Queen, the kind of access that was most unusual for someone who wasn't of noble birth. Over the next few years, he was frequently called to court to converse with her, including on matters of some intimacy, such as her proposed marriage to the Duke of Anjou. It was said that the pair developed their own code language to relay messages to one another, and that they even used code names for each other. In his diaries, Dee used the capital letter E, topped with a crown, whenever he wrote about Elizabeth. The Queen, who called Dee at this time her special eyes, denoted him with two zeros to represent eyes, followed by Dee's favourite mystical number, 7. As such, Dee became the first 007 agent in Her Majesty's service. It was said that Elizabeth had a strong sense of the cosmological forces supposedly acting on her, and that she felt Dee provided the kind of mystical revelations to help her govern, which other members of her administration could not. She took to referring to Dee as my philosopher. When a strange wax effigy of the Queen was found under a tree in Lincoln's Inn Fields in the centre of London, stuck all over with pig bristles, John Dee was called on to determine its meaning. When the Queen suddenly fell ill of an undiagnosed mystery illness, Dee was once again called to determine its severity. And when, one night, an unusually bright star was observed in the sky, it was Dee who was asked to decipher what it meant. Despite John Dee's devotion to the Queen and what some believed was a magical hold over her, he was never offered the official position of court philosopher that he so desired. Nonetheless, Dee continued his studies of astronomy, astrology, alchemy and magic, with the ultimate goal of understanding the truth of the universe. In 1566, Dee moved in with his mother, who lived in a ramshackled, sprawling cottage in Mortlake, a village by the Thames, about 8 miles west of London. On moving in, Dee set about arranging the massive collection of books and manuscripts he'd amassed on all his travels. Among them was Johannes de Burgo's occult text, Treatise on Magic, and Secretum Secretorum, a treatise on the nature of immortality, attributed to Aristotle. Before long, Dee's mother's cottage was transformed into one of the largest libraries in Europe. It was so big, Dee even added extensions to the building, as well as acquiring neighbouring buildings to house all the material. Neighbours spoke of laboratories that he'd also set up, full of all kinds of apparatus containing unknown substances that bubbled away mysteriously. No one saw his inner sanctum, though, Dee's most private study, where he stored his magical equipment and books like Heinrich Cornelius Agrippa's 1531 tome, De Occulta Philosophia, about the powers of magic. This was a time of growing interest in alchemy, a medieval type of chemistry which its adherents insisted could transform elements and materials into other elements and materials. The major focus was to find a method of converting base metals into gold via a secret ingredient known as the fabled Philosopher's Stone, not an object as such, but rather a chemical concoction. If one could establish the correct recipe for it, they could be wealthy beyond their dreams. It was also rumoured to make anyone who drank it immortal. Though no one knows exactly what Dee was doing in his laboratory, in the early 1570s he fell seriously ill. Much of alchemy revolved around the use of mercury, which is a highly toxic substance. Dee would eventually recover, but by the time he was well enough to continue his work, he was broke once again. In desperation, he wrote to the Queen's court and was granted another patronage of a few hundred pounds per annum, but it wasn't enough, because Dee had set his sights on a new series of experiments. For these, he would need enough money to dedicate months and months of his time, concentrating solely on the task at hand. If successful, he would have the power to grant anybody whatever they wanted.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit RightRug.com. That's RiteRug.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
In November 1577, something strange appeared suddenly in the night sky. As bright as the moon, it was some kind of celestial object that seemed to shimmer from a burning fire inside a dazzling cloud, with a vast dusty tail stretching out behind it. Observers all over the world were mystified and horrified in equal measure. To a number of the Queen's advisers, it was a clear portent of doom. A few days later, Francis Walsingham, Queen Elizabeth's chief spy, uncovered an Austrian plot to unseat the Queen. As the Queen and her courtiers debated how best to respond, John Dee attempted to speak with the Queen once again to request a recognition as her court's official philosopher to raise more money for his new experiments. Dee was forced to wait his turn for an audience, and by the time he got it, it was clear his chance had gone. However, visiting the Queen at the same time was a rather loud, stout and sturdy-looking man with a fetching moustache. The man was Francis Drake, a slave trader, privateer, and a constant thorn in the side of King Philip II of Spain, whose nation was the leading colonial power of the time. Drake had come to update the Queen on an epic voyage he was preparing to embark on, that she and a number of her associates were financing. The plan was to complete a circumnavigation of the globe to discover what other lands might exist in the world that they could exploit, while taking out as many Spanish vessels as they could along the way. John Dee saw a golden opportunity. With all his knowledge and experience of cartography and being close to some of the world's greatest cartographers, he offered his services in assisting the voyage. With the Queen's full attention once again, he outlined a scheme for England to lay claim to the fabled New World in a direct challenge to the King of Spain. As he told the Queen, it was based on some historical and magic research that he'd been apparently carrying out for a while. It revealed that now was the time for her reign to shift into a new expansionist phase in pursuit of what he called a new British Empire. The Queen couldn't help but be impressed. A short time later, Dee presented her with his Britannici Imperii Limiter, the limits of the British Empire. In it, he predicted that the English Navy would become the key weapon with which she could challenge the King of Spain's global supremacy. Dee's immediate financial future was once again secured. It was time to start the next phase of his experiments. Thick velvet curtains are drawn across the windows of a wood-panelled study to keep out the chill of the midwinter night. At its centre stands a great wooden desk, surrounded on all sides by endless bookshelves, stuffed with books and papers. Stacks of books and manuscripts litter the desk in untidy heaps, all pushed to one side. In their place are two tall, white flickering candles, the only light in the room besides that cast by glowing embers smouldering in a large stone fireplace. Two bearded men sit across from each other, both gazing intently into a large crystal orb on the floor between them that scatters sparkles of light across the dim chamber. The men are John Dee and his associate Barnabas Saul. and they are sitting in Dee's inner sanctum. It's mid-December 1581, but in that moment, time seems to have completely stopped. "Ha, I see him clearly," says Saul in a hushed voice. "Welcome, Anael," he says with a dramatic flourish. Anael was said to be one of the seven angels of creation. Dee was convinced he was the angel of intelligence who ruled over the entire world. But from the way Saul describes the entity he's claiming to see in the orb, Dee isn't so sure it's him. "Ask him to identify himself," urges Dee, gazing into the ball, where sadly, unlike Saul, he sees nothing. Saul hesitates for a moment. Barnabas Saul, a self-proclaimed scryer, crystal gazer, and channeler of spirits and angels, arrived at Mortlake a few days before, claiming to have rare books to sell to Dee. Dee had enough knowledge of books and booksellers to doubt he had anything he needed, but was impressed by the man's apparent sensitivity for the occult. At the time, Dee was on the lookout for a partner to help him with his latest experiment, the thing he'd been building up to all this time, an attempt to contact angels. Though Dee had the material knowledge of what was required, he knew deep down that he wasn't possessed with the kind of psychic sensitivity that he believed was needed to make contact. What he needed was a scryer, someone with the supposed power to communicate with other entities. So Dee took a chance on Saul and asked him to stay at his house and assist him. Before long, they were ensconced in his study, chanting incantations into the air as they worked through spell after spell from Dee's many occult texts. Back in the study, on that mid-December night, Saul's face contorts strangely. "Aha! A second spirit has now appeared," he exclaims. Dee stares harder into the crystal orb, though he still can't see anything other than the reflected flames of the candles. He senses the light glitter and flash even brighter as it dances in the darkness above the men's heads. "This one is very beautiful," continued Saul. "He's clothed in glittering gold robes. Beams of light blaze from his head. He has eyes of fire." As Barnabas Saul continues to describe the entity in the crystal orb, Dee can feel the hairs rise up on the back of his neck. Now this sounded more like a nail. "I can see characters writ upon the crystal in shining gold," explains Saul, who hurriedly scribbles them down and passes the paper to Dee. "It's Hebrew," says Dee, taking it excitedly. "Ask him if any angel is assigned to this stone," presses Dee, grabbing one of the other smaller crystals nearby and placing it next to the orb. Saul duly reports that this second crystal would, in due course, reveal the Archangel Michael as named in the Holy Scriptures. "Anael foretells that Michael shall appear to thee after Christmas," says Saul. He says, "Thou must prepare thyself to prayer and fasting, and in the name of God be secret." Dee laps it all up. "I am Anael. I will take my leave now," says Saul, spelling out the name letter by letter. A-N-N-A-E-L. Dee frowns. The angel's name was spelt with only one N. Either the angel didn't know how to spell its own name, or Saul had been mistaken, or he'd been making the whole thing up all along. Early in the new year, Barnabas Saul was accused of committing the crime of consorting with spirits. It's unclear why Dee was not included in the charge. Perhaps Saul had been less secretive in his work for other clients. At his hearing the following month, Saul was acquitted due to a lack of evidence, but on returning from court, perhaps fearful of another prosecution, Saul admitted to Dee that he neither saw or heard spiritual creatures anymore. Dee was once again on his own, but the news was out that he was looking for a spiritual partner to fulfill his ambitions. Then, on the afternoon of March 8th, there came a knock at his door. Waiting for him on the doorstep was a Mr. Clerkson, an agent for men purporting to be spirit mediums, looking for wealthy clients. Clerkson had brought with him a so-called friend of his, who he introduced as 26-year-old Edward Talbot. Perhaps he could be the man that Dee was looking for, Clerkson suggested. Dee agreed to meet them for dinner the following day to discuss the idea further. Later that evening, as it approached midnight, Dee was poring over a manuscript in his study when he sensed a shift in the air. All about, the room was ablaze with a strange red ambient light. Dee rushed outside and stared up in disbelief. The entire night sky appeared to be burning in fiery flames, as though a great fire had just risen above the earth. Dee should have taken it as a sign. You've been listening to part 2 of Unexplained, season 7, episode 18, A Dance with Mr. Dee. Part 3 will be released next Friday, April 5th. This episode was written by Diane Hope and Richard McLean Smith. Unexplained is an AV Club Productions podcast created by Richard McLean Smith. All other elements of the podcast, including the music, were also produced by me, Richard McLean Smith. Unexplained, the book and audiobook, with stories never before featured on the show, is now available to buy worldwide. You can purchase from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Waterstones and other bookstores. Please subscribe to and rate the show wherever you get your podcasts, and feel free to get in touch with any thoughts or ideas regarding the stories you've heard on the show. Perhaps you have an explanation of your own you'd like to share. You can find out more at unexplainedpodcast.com and reach us online through Twitter at unexplainedpod and Facebook at facebook.com/unexplainedpodcast.
You dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.